This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. How much do you think your kids, or you for that matter, know about managing money, about buying and selling stocks and bonds, about currencies and exchange rates, about price-to-earnings ratios or puts and calls, about different ways to make money, about credit and debit cards, market share and initial public offerings, about compound interest and being long and short on stocks, about taxes, options and index funds, about mortgages and market capital, the Federal Reserve and the Securities and Exchange Commission, about how to analyze a company, and on and on. I'm going to go out on a limb here and guess that you probably don't know as much as you should about any or all of these topics. One of the problems here is that schools are simply not doing enough to teach kids the financial skills that they're going to need to thrive in the years to come. Kids are expected to learn it all someplace else. We're turning out book smart kids who know more by the age of 16 than we did when we were 21, but are they going to have the financial skills to manage the money that they're going to earn, spend, and invest for the next 50 years? And who's going to teach them about all that? Chances are, nobody's doing it. In this part of today's show, we're going to be talking about money, what kids need to know, what we need to know, and what we need to know to be able to teach them. We'll jump into all of that and a lot more when Positive Parenting continues right after this.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this, from the MrDad.com radio network.
I'm in almost every school bus and classroom.
I go to school with your children.
We say the Pledge of Allegiance together.
You see me around the neighborhood and you tell me that I'm a pretty good kid.
Well, I'm one out of every five children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger.
This problem is closer than you think. My teacher tells me we can grow up to be whatever we want.
I want to grow up to be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry.
There's enough food in this country to feed everybody.
Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank for ways to help.
Every dollar you donate helps provide 8 meals for kids like me, quietly struggling with hunger.
Together, we are Feeding America, brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and my guest for this part of today's show is David Bianchi, who is the author of Blue Chip Kids, What Every Child and Parent Should Know About Money, Investing, and the Stock Market. David, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
You know, I think you're absolutely true. The premise of the book is that kids need to learn about money, probably at much younger ages than we think that they do. And how do you begin to introduce this idea? I mean, in some ways, it's like completely counter to what parents think.
Well, that is unfortunately true, but I think it's never too early to start. And my wife and I have one child, a boy who's now 14, and when he was maybe 10, we started talking to him about money and financial matters in very simple ways, and we would do it with real-life illustrations of what goes on every day. For example, we would talk to him about what the bill was going to be at the restaurant and have him try to guess and show it to him so he could see what things cost. We'd go through the checkout line at the grocery store and let him look at the bill and so he could see what things cost. And this started really a focus on understanding the concept of money as early as 10 years old, and he very much gravitated to it and liked it. And I looked around and thought, wow, it's great to see that someone at that age would be interested in it, and it's too bad they're not teaching it in school. And
all right, so let's start with one of the basics. What exactly is money? How do you explain that to a child? It seems kind of counterintuitive. I mean, you know, you go to one of those machines and you take the stuff out of it.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, particularly now with these smartphones, they think all you have to do is tap a little button on your phone that says buy now and it'll magically get sent to your house. What I started talking to him about very early on was the fact that every dollar that he sees us spend is an after-tax dollar. And we started to talk about what I need to earn so that once the tax bite hits, we have after-tax money to pay for things. And that's a concept that he got, and one of the ways I tried to illustrate it was I came home one day with a big stack of $1 bills, and I said, I want you to pretend this is my annual income, so let me show you what happens to it. And I took about 30% off the top, and I said, this is what the federal government takes in federal income taxes. And then I took a little more for state income taxes, and he watched the pile get smaller. And I said, here's what it takes to run the house. And the pile got even smaller, and on and on. And I said, and after all of these things get paid for, look at the stack. There's not that much left, and what is left is our discretionary income, and this is what we can buy fun stuff with. And boy, it was a real eye-opener for him.
How do you answer the question I'm sure that he asked, which is, well, why do you give money to the government? What do they do?
Yeah, that's right, and I told him. I said that the government pays for all kinds of things that we benefit from, and they have to get the money from someplace, and they raise it in the form of taxes, which he had no difficulty understanding. And I said, look, the national defense budget is part of what they pay for, and that's a huge number, and we pay for that through our taxes. And we pay for the Department of Education and the Environmental Protection Agency, and all of this takes money.
You know, you talk in the book about lots of different ways to pay for things, and you just mentioned, though, you have your smartphone and you push something. I've started now with taking checks that I would ordinarily have gone to the bank or gone to the ATM for. Now you just take a picture with the phones. You don't even have to leave the house. It really kind of blurs the lines between cash, which almost nobody uses anymore, but credit cards and electronic funds transfers and different things like that. So how do you explain to a child in the beginning, and then maybe we'll talk a little bit about older kids too, but there are lots of different ways to get rid of your money.
Oh, yeah. It takes a real commitment on behalf of the parents that they want to teach their kids about this. Parents have to be willing to invest some time to educate their kids about this. And parents know more about this subject matter than they want to give themselves credit for. What parents oftentimes sort of take for granted, kids don't know. So if you are willing to spend the time, and maybe what I do is I try to spend 15 minutes with him every few days as he reads some of the topics in the book, and then we sit there and we talk about them. And he understands what's going on, because in his lifetime, and he is now only 14 years old, the whole concept of money is going to be way different than it is today. So this is sort of evolutionary. And you're right when you say not a whole lot of people carry a lot of cash these days. They don't, because they've got credit card, they now have Apple Pay, and they have the little square that you can swipe your card in at the top of your phone. And now they have Bitcoin, and who knows what's going to take the place of Bitcoin. So in his lifetime, there's going to be a tremendous transformation, and it's you just have to do it one little topic at a time.
But how do you explain? I mean, I'm just kind of curious about all these things, because I've had discussions like this with my older kids, and I'm starting to have them with my younger one, who's 12, about, you know, what's a check? What does that mean? I mean, and what is a credit card? I actually had this discussion with my 25-year-old daughter. I'm suggesting to her that she's old enough that and responsible enough that she should take advantage of some of those credit card offers that come in the mail that are pre-approved, because she needs to start building up a credit report. And, you know, she says, well, you know, what does that mean? I mean, you get the bill for it later. Do you have to pay for it later? I mean, it's an odd sense of ignorance. I was surprised that she didn't know, or that I was surprised, I guess, that I had just taken it for granted that everybody knows that. But yeah, not everybody does. I mean, the concept of a credit card is such a bizarre thing, really, if you think about it.
Yeah, it is, and that particular topic, along with debit cards and the difference between the two, is covered in the book. And this is why it just is mystifying and aggravating that this is not taught in great detail in the schools. The schools are not focusing on this like they should, and it's the one lifetime skill that kids are going to need forever. And most of what they're learning in school, they're only going to need for a short period of time. And I've been really advocating for the school systems to start teaching this in a meaningful way. Right now in the U.S., there are 17 states that have some form of financial literacy requirement before kids can graduate from high school. But that's only 17. And then you have to look at the quality of the programs that are being taught. And something is better than nothing. But we need to do a much better job of this. But parents can't just sit back and say, well, if the schools aren't going to do it, I'm not going to do it. This is the number one most important thing, I believe, that we can teach our kids right. about substantively that will benefit them for the rest of their lives.
Right. But give us some specifics, though, about, just for example, the checks or credit cards, about how money gets from place to place. And how do you explain that to a child?
Yeah. Well, what I do is I have them go to my wallet. What we did was, and I pulled out my credit cards and I put them on a table. And I let them hold them and look at them. And then I explain to them that this is my American Express card. And every time you see me at the store and I hand it to the store clerk and she swipes it through the machine, let me tell you what's happening. And then I walk them through the process. I said the first thing they're doing is they're checking through the computers as to whether or not this is a legitimate account. And if it's legitimate and it truly belongs to me, then the money is going to be instantly taken out of, going to be instantly charged to my account. And every time I do this for the course of the month, all of these charges are going to get added onto a bill. And I'm going to get a bill at the end of the month, and I have to pay it. And I can pay it electronically or by mailing in a check. And then we studied the actual check because I let them look at the numbers at the bottom, which have routing numbers and ABA numbers and account numbers. And I said, this is how we can pay the bill. And I said, the minute I sign the check, the money comes out of the account and gets delivered to whoever I write to the payee on this line right here. And he understood it. At one time, I even mapped it out for him on a big piece of paper. But it took a little time. But at 12 years old, he got it.
And there's so many different things that are going on, though, that are behind the scenes. There's the percentage that the merchant is being charged. There's a little bit of cash back that you may be getting from whoever the credit card issuer is, and it's kind of a little bit of a free loan and all that stuff. It'll make your head spin if you think about it.
Yeah, that's the big distinction, and that's one of the things I spent time talking to him about. I said, look, with a credit card, for the during the month, you're spending someone else's money because you're buying something this minute,
right.
And you're not paying the bill until the end of the month. But with a debit card, it's instantly coming out of your account.
Exactly.
So if you don't have the money in the account, when you swipe the debit card, they're not going to complete the transaction.
Talking with David Bianchi, who's the author of Blue Chip Kids, What Every Child and Parent Should Know About Money Investing in the Stock Market. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to keep talking about money.
My name's Tyler, and in 9 years, I'll be an alcoholic. I'll start drinking in middle school, just at parties. But my parents won't start talking to me about it till high school.
Kids who drink before age 15 are 5 times more likely to have alcohol problems when they're adults.
Thing is, my parents won't even see it coming.
So start talking before they start drinking. To learn more, go to StopAlcoholAbuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and this station.
Hey, is that a faucet running?
Nope, that's not a faucet. That's a river rushing through the forest.
It is?
Yeah. Forest rivers provide over 100 million people with clean water to drink. The water comes straight from the forest to us, in fact.
What? I can't hear you because of the vacuum.
That's not a vacuum. That's the trees in the forest cleaning up the air we breathe.
How do trees clean the air?
They soak up the dirty air on their leaves, branches, and trunks, which means clean air for us.
Cool. I didn't know that.
Yep. But the forest does more than give us clean air and water. It gives us shade for hot days, birds to listen to, and trees to climb.
Wow, that's awesome. I didn't know how cool the forest could be. Hey, let's go explore some more.
Visit the forest today and enjoy all it does, just for you. To learn more about the forest and find one near you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Driving has a rhythm all its own. Don't wreck it with a text. Before you get behind the wheel, silence your phone. Or better yet, designate a texter. For more text-free driving tips, visit stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with David Bianchi, who is the author of Blue Chip Kids, What Every Child and Parent Should Know About Money, Investing, and the Stock Market. And we were just talking about credit cards and the free loan in a way that you're getting as the person who's getting a bill from the credit card, because you don't have to pay for it until your bill shows up. And then you have another usually 21 days or 28 days sometimes to make the payment without being charged any interest. At the same time, though, you're probably having a discussion with your child about interest. I mean, you've been talking about taxes, and you know, we want to talk to them about money coming in. You put some money into a bank account. Just start with a bank account. We can talk about stocks later. But you put your money into a bank account. You put $100 in there, and at the end of a year, you'll have $110. Not in real life, but you know, just for illustration purposes, that how do we get the idea that money can increase in value, and where is the bank getting the money to pay me?
Yeah, it's all a big circle, you know. And I've spoken to him and spent time talking to him about simple interest and compound interest, and those two topics are in the book also with specific illustrations. And I said, look, how would you like to make money while you sleep? And he couldn't even imagine what I was talking about. And I said, well, one of the ways you can make money while you sleep is if you have your money invested in something that will generate interest for you. And I said, let me show you some examples. And I gave him an example of a deposit with $500 earning interest at 5%. And then I said, at the end of the year, you're going to have $25 in interest. So at the end of the year, you'll have $525. And if you leave it in for another year, you'll get another $25. So I said, but let me show you the power of compounded interest. And then I walk them through the example of the $25 in interest in the first year. And now the next year, it's 5% of 525 and not 5% of 500. And now the number's getting bigger. And I said, it's the power of compounding. And I mapped it all out on a big piece of paper for him, and these illustrations are in the book. And he said, wow. And so now he goes around trying to figure out what banks pay compounded interest.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty important concept. I actually was very surprised with sitting with my 12-year-old. She was doing some math that she needs to be doing. And they gave an example of somebody borrows some money and has to pay 30% extra for something. But they used simple interest instead of compound interest. It's like I never even heard of that almost anymore. Nobody has simple interest, do they?
No, it's not often. If they can get away with charging you compound interest, they will, because the numbers become so big, and that's one of the dangers of kids who are going off to college for the first time, and at 18 years old, all of a sudden they get unsolicited credit cards in the mail that have lines of credit of maybe $1,500 or something, and they just think it's free money, and they start to charge, and then they don't have the money to pay the credit cards, and then the interest gets assessed, and it starts to accrue on a compounded basis, and by the time they graduate, they can't believe what they owe, because they may have done this with a half a dozen credit cards, and it's very dangerous, and which is why I think kids need to learn all about this before they ever go off to college, so they don't fall into this trap.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk a little bit more about investing. I'm just thinking of all the various difficult conversations, they're not difficult to have, but they're complicated sometimes. I mean, how do you explain to a child what stock is?
Yeah, well, what I did was I said to him, I said, Trent, I said, I want you to tell me what your four favorite companies are. And he said, well, they're McDonald's, Coca-Cola, Apple, and something else, Disney. And I said, okay, how would you like to be an owner of each of those companies? And he didn't even know what to say. And I said, well, you can actually be an owner. And I say, because you can buy stock in each of those companies if you want to. And he said to me, well, what stock? And I said, it's an ownership interest in a company. And to reflect your ownership interest, you will be issued a share of stock. And I said, in the old days, if you bought a share of stock, they would literally mail you the share of stock. Nowadays, that doesn't happen very much, and now it's just all done electronically, and you can look up your account online. So I said, let's take a look. And I went to one of the websites, and we looked up those four companies. And then we walked through the data that was presented on each of the companies, and I said, you can own stock in each of these companies if you want to, and here's how much this one cost per share. And we went to a different screen, and here's what Apple cost per share. And then I went to the button that allows you to do a stock chart over the last couple of years, and we looked at how the prices of the stock moved over the last few years. And he then became very interested. And I'll tell you a quick, funny story. To try to get him really interested in this, I opened up a little electronic account for him, and I let him invest in those four stocks that he selected. And he would come home and monitor it every day. And I'm in my office one day, and I got a text message with a bunch of exclamation marks, and it said, Dad, I'm up $500. He was, because he looked it up while he was in school.
Okay. Oh, see, that's the advantage of having a smartphone. I guess you can check those things.
Yeah.
So was that real money or
fake? It was real money, yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So that's, I think you have to, the big mistake that parents make is they think the kids, because they're young, won't be interested in this whole subject matter. And they're wrong about that. I have seen this time and time again. They think they just won't be interested, but they will be. And they think, well, they're not smart enough yet to understand it. And they're wrong, which is why a lot of schools are developing these after-school investing clubs and finance clubs in the middle schools when their kids are 12 through 16. Kids really do enjoy it. And if it's presented in a way that's simple, entertaining, and educational, they will pay attention, and you'll be really surprised by what they learn.
Now, what about the concept of borrowing money? We talked a little bit about credit cards, which is a way of borrowing, even though I don't think a lot of people think of it that way. But I think it's a bit of a difficult concept to, you say, well, we own our house. Well, we don't really own it. The bank actually owns it, and we're paying them for it a little bit at a time. How does that discussion happen? How does the idea get transmitted?
Well, I talked to him about in fact, the book starts out on page one with the basic concept that you cannot spend more than you can afford to spend, and you must save some money all the time. And I try to drill that into his head that he has to live within his means. And I said, look, debt is a slippery slope. There's good debt, but there's bad debt. And bad debt is when you try to borrow too much money from the bank or from a credit card company to pay for things that you truly can't afford. And then I gave him examples. And we sat there and I said, look, if you want to buy a new iPad and it costs $750, and you only have $100, you can't afford it. Even if someone were to lend you the other $650, I said, you don't have any income to pay it back. So you will be in debt for a long time because of a purchase that you cannot afford. And I said, many people do this all the time, particularly young people, which is why in the U.S. right now, we've got $1.3 trillion of outstanding student debt because kids started borrowing too much money to pay for their education. And
some of that's got to be legitimate, though, isn't it?
I don't think it's legitimate. No, I don't think so. And the reason I say that is these kids will never be able to pay off this $1.3 trillion of student debt, which is why the U.S. government is now talking about implementing programs to try to forgive some of this debt, because it's literally impossible for kids to pay it back, and it's making it impossible for them after they graduate from college to go out and start families and buy houses, because they can't get mortgages because they've got this big debt hanging over them. And if they had thought more about it when they were in college or right before they went to college, there are probably a lot of schools they could have gone to and gotten just as good an education for less money.
Yeah, exactly. David Bianchi is the author of Blue Chip Kids, What Every Child and Parent Should Know About Money, Investing, and the Stock Market. David, is there a website people can go to for a little bit more information?
There is. We have a website called bluechipkids.com. and the book's on Amazon, and we're on Facebook, and there's a lot of information on the website.
Excellent. David, thanks very much.
Thank you.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared.
It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs.
I start to cough. Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Today, one out of 13 children suffer from some form of asthma, accounting for nearly one-third of all emergency room visits.
I feel like I'm choking.
It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
A little whistle sound comes out when I breathe.
But while your child may suffer from asthma, asthma doesn't have to make your child suffer. There are simple ways you can prevent your child's next attack. To learn more, call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. That's 1-866-662-8822. Log on to www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Hey there, welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and it's time for a Parents at Play segment. You know, school is back in session. Where did the summer go? I just really have no idea. But in the frenzy to get those kids ready for the new school year, we're going to be spending an awful lot of time and money on clothes and supplies. But you know, there's one thing we forget about: healthy snacks and lunches. So in that spirit, here are some of our favorites. Coolie Coolie. Move over, kale. There is another superfood in town, and it's called Moringa. What? You've never heard of it? Well, you soon will, because Moringa may very well be the world's most nutritious green. Moringa has been used in Ayurvedic medicine for centuries, and it may cure or prevent as many as 300 diseases. But it also packs a serious nutritional wallop. According to the good folks at Coolie Coolie, the Oakland, California-based importer, gram for gram, Moringa has twice the protein of yogurt, 4 times the vitamin A of carrots, 3 times the potassium of bananas, 4 times the calcium of milk, and 7 times the vitamin C of oranges. Coolie Coolie has Moringa as a powder, as a tea, or mixed with other ingredients into delicious, gluten-free, high-fiber, filling, and satisfying vegan bars. You can find out a lot more at CoolieCoolieFoods.com. Crispy fruit freeze-dried fruits from Crispy Green. Snack foods don't get a whole lot simpler than this. Each bag of crispy fruit contains exactly one ingredient: tangerine, apple, Asian pear, banana, cantaloupe, mango, or pineapple. That's it. The fruit itself tastes exactly like what it's supposed to. It's pleasantly crunchy and kind of melts in your mouth. Your kids will love it, and so will you. Plus, it's easy to pack and doesn't have to be refrigerated. You can buy it at Amazon and a lot of other retailers, or at CrispyGreen.com. Mama Chia. Mama Chia has a wide range of, well, you guessed it, chia-based products that are gluten-free, nutritionally dense, mostly vegan. Some products contain a tiny little bit of honey or milk, and non-GMO. Best of all, every one of the products we tried was really, really good. The granola clusters are great by themselves or sprinkled onto something else, like yogurt, for example. If you're new to chia, it'll take you a few seconds to get used to the texture of the squeeze pouch and energy drinks. It's available at a lot of grocery stores like Whole Foods, or you can get it at mamachia.com. Shine Organics. Shine has 4 nutrition-packed superfood pouches, each with a self-explanatory purpose: to calm, elevate, purify, or revive. The ingredients are certified organic, gluten-free, vegan, and kosher, and the chia seeds are milled so you're a little bit less likely to get them stuck between your teeth as you might be with other products. The pouches themselves are BPA-free. Shine pouches are technically for adults, but kids can certainly eat them, although they taste so good that you're not going to want to share. They're available at Target or at shineorganics.com. You can get reviews of a lot more products and games and toys and other stuff at parentsatplay.com. We'll be back with another Parents at Play or Ask Mr. Dad segment next week. Until then, I'm Armin Brott.
Thanks for listening to Positive Parenting. You can get more information on today's show and what we're working on in the weeks ahead at MrDad.com. While you're there, visit the MrDad.com gift shop with everything you need to help you become the dad or mom you want to be. Positive Parenting is a production of the MrDad.com radio network. Now, go be a great parent.